This is the voice of contract management presented by the law firm of Kroll & Mooring, exclusively for NCMA. Stay up to date on all things contract management 5 minutes at a time. Our team at Kroll & Mooring presents these podcasts to keep you up to speed on a bi-monthly basis. We will cover everything from regulatory updates to crucial changes that affect government contracting.
We are your co-hosts for this edition, Peter Ayer and Yuan Zhou. As we record this podcast at about 3:30 on February 2nd, we're in the midst of a government shutdown. It's a partial government shutdown, unlike the shutdown that we saw in 2025. And unlike that prior shutdown, we expect this partial shutdown to be short and the impacts to be quite minimal. Congress has not passed funding bills to fund key parts of the government for the remainder of FY26. That includes for the Department of War, State, Treasury, Labor, HHS, Transportation, HUD, and Homeland Security, as well as a number of independent agencies, the judiciary, and certain national security and foreign operations functions. So as a result, funding for these agencies and dozens more lapsed at midnight on Saturday and are shut down at this moment. Of course, this leads to a number of questions, confusion, things like that. We've got some guidance on our website about shutdowns generally and what it may mean, but we think it's going to be relatively short, and here's why. The Senate passed a funding bill late Friday after striking a bipartisan deal, but the agreement still needs the approval of the House, which is expected to consider and likely pass the bill early this week. There are a number of meetings taking place today, including both Congress and the White House, to try to move this forward expeditiously. And what we're expecting are 5 long-term spending bills while extending funding for DHS for 2 weeks to allow for talks over reforms to immigration enforcement. So obviously something that's top of mind for us and for government contractors. I'm going to turn it over to Yuan to talk about an important update on OMB and software attestations. Yuan?
Thanks, Peter. On January 23rd, OMB issued Memorandum 26-05, which rescinds prior OMB memoranda requiring agencies to collect the Secure Software Development Attestation form from companies that sell software or products containing software to the government. As of last June, the administration had already retracted a Biden administration directive for the attestation form collection to be formalized in the FAR, which already signaled that it disfavored that requirement. The new OMB memo states that the form, and I'm quoting from the memo, imposed unproven and burdensome software accounting processes that prioritize compliance over genuine security investments. It diverted agencies from developing tailored assurance requirements for software and neglected to account for threats posed by insecure hardware. Now, the memo directs agencies to develop software and hardware assurance policies that are tailored to their risk profiles and mission needs. Note, however, that agencies are still given the discretion to use the attestation form or to require software suppliers to provide a software bill of materials or leverage other federal government secure software and hardware development guidance, such as NIST SP 800-218. So as a result, some agencies may continue to use the attestation form, while others may use tailored or contract-specific software supply chain requirements, which means that contractors will need to track compliance on an agency-by-agency or contract-by-contract basis. So it'll be important for contractors to be mindful of updates from their customers, since different agencies are likely to take different approaches. Peter?
All right, now 2 updates from GSA. The first relates to cybersecurity. GSA has released a new CUI guide that defines the processes and procedures that will be used to protect CUI on non-federal systems, that includes contractor systems, in accordance with NIST and GSA requirements, particularly NIST SP 800-171 Rev 3, and NIST SP 800-172 Rev 3. In essence, what this means when you parse through the guidance is that GSA is placing new cybersecurity requirements for new contracts that parallel the Department of War's CMMC program. It's not exactly the same, but there are clear overlaps. So historically, when we've talked about CMMC, that's just been the Pentagon and its contractors, but it looks like that is being carried into GSA to some degree. So that new CUI guide is available and an important reference. The second GSA item relates to resellers. GSA has issued an RFI to conduct market research and determine what additional information may be needed to substantiate proposed pricing and confirm that markups applied to OEM pricing result in fair and reasonable pricing to the government. And according to the RFI, this may include establishing additional controls to ensure the government receives fair and reasonable pricing when markups exceed a certain percentage. That's the direct quote from the RFI. So this really is a continuation of what we've seen throughout the course of the past year, where GSA is really closely scrutinizing resellers to better understand the value they add and how they fit into the overall federal marketplace in terms of the role they play, the pricing, and the value. So obviously, we'll be interested to see what GSA does with those RFI responses. Now back to you, Juan.
Great. A couple more quick developments. In late January, the Pentagon launched a pilot program that will provide no-fee commercial evaluation licenses for certain patents that have come out of Pentagon laboratories. The program is meant to maximize the value of the Pentagon's $3.5 billion annual research investment by easing the licensing pathway and helping industry partners accelerate commercialization of innovative technologies. Next, on January 26, USA Rare Earth announced its entry into a non-binding letter of intent with the Department of Commerce and a collaboration with the Department of Energy. The CHIPS program provided an LOI covering a total of $1.6 billion, including $277 million in proposed federal funding and $1.3 billion in a proposed senior secured loan under the CHIPS Act. USA Rare Earth will issue to Commerce 16.1 million shares of common stock and approximately 17.6 million warrants. So yet another example of the government using different tools and levers to invest in key industries. Peter, back to you.
We've been talking quite a bit about the focus on the 8A program, and we have yet another development. This follows on the heels of audits initiated by Treasury, the Pentagon, GSA, and others. So here, SBA has issued formal guidance to SBA program officials, and here's the direct quote, reiterating that race-based discrimination within the 8A business development program is unconstitutional and unlawful. The agency stated that the SBA does not deny any small business owner admission to the 8A program simply because they are white. And then the quote continues, that the SBA does not consider any business owner to be socially disadvantaged and therefore eligible to participate in the program simply because they are a member of a certain minority group. And then the guidance then continues about other ways that socially disadvantaged, that prong, can be established. So a lot of activity in the 8A program.
That's all for today. Thanks for listening to the Voice of Contract Management, brought to you by Kroll & Mooring exclusively for NCMA. Stay tuned for our next episode as we continue to discuss all things government contracting. In the meantime, explore your learning opportunities at www.ncmahq.org/coursecatalog.